They called him charming, intelligent, even presidential. Ted Bundy didn't just blend in. He thrived in plain sight. A law student with political aspirations, he dated college girls by day and slaughtered them by night. But what stunned America wasn't just the brutality of his murders. It was the fact that nobody saw it coming. Not his professors, not his girlfriends, not even the police. He escaped from jail twice and murdered again, even as his face made headlines. He defended himself in court, smiled for cameras, and flirted with jurors while mothers buried their daughters. By the time Florida's electric chair silenced him in 1989, over 30 women were confirmed dead, but experts believe the real number is far higher. What if the most terrifying part of Ted Bundy's story isn't the murders, but how many people helped him get away with them? This is the story of America's most seductive serial killer, and the institutions, relationships, and blind spots that let him thrive. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Man Who Could Be President. To the average onlooker, Theodore Robert Bundy was the definition of all-American potential. Born in 1946 in Burlington, Vermont, Bundy's early life hid behind a veil of suburban respectability. Raised believing his mother was his sister and his grandparents were his parents, the lies began early, and so did the fractures in his psyche. By the time he reached his 20s, Bundy had the kind of polished exterior that opened doors. He volunteered on political campaigns. He dated respectable women. He earned praise from law professors. One professor even said he could see Bundy running for office someday. In reality, Bundy was already hunting. His first known attack on 18-year-old Karen Sparks took place in Seattle in January 1974. She survived, barely. Then came a rapid escalation. Linda Healy, abducted from her basement bedroom. Donna Manson, Susan Rancourt, Roberta Parks, all young, college-aged, brunette women with middle-part hair. A Bundy trademark. One by one, they disappeared without a trace. No witnesses. No bodies. Bundy was a predator in control of his image. He feigned injuries to lure women to his car. He wore a sling, crutches, sometimes even a fake cast. When they approached to help, he struck, literally, often with a crowbar, rendering them unconscious before driving them away to be murdered and discarded like forgotten toys. Authorities had no idea they were chasing one man. His technique shifted, his location changed, and Bundy had an uncanny ability to disappear just as the heat intensified. By mid-1974, Washington and Oregon were in a state of fear, and women were cutting their hair short, changing routines, and staying indoors. But Ted Bundy wasn't stopping. He was getting bolder. By July, he abducted two women in broad daylight from Lake Sammamish State Park in Washington. Witnesses described a handsome man with his arm in a sling who introduced himself as Ted. It was the first time law enforcement had a name. But even then, he slipped through the net. A sketch was released. Thousands of tips poured in. One of them came from a woman named Elizabeth Klepfer, Bundy's longtime girlfriend. She told police she feared her boyfriend might be involved. He matched the composite sketch. He drove a tan Volkswagen. He owned crutches and slings. But her report, like many others, was buried under red tape and jurisdictional chaos. Bundy was always three steps ahead. As states struggled to communicate, he left Washington for Utah, and the murders continued. In October 1974, Melissa Smith, the 17-year-old daughter of a police chief, vanished. Then came Laura Amy, Nancy Wilcox. Their bodies were later found in remote canyons and ravines, often with signs of extreme violence. Some had been sexually assaulted with foreign objects. Others were too decomposed to determine exact cause of death. Even while attending law school, Bundy managed to sustain his dual identity. To his professors, he was brilliant. To his victims, he was death. He was finally arrested in August 1975 after a routine traffic stop in Salt Lake City. Officers discovered burglary tools in his car, a ski mask, handcuffs, rope, an ice pick. He was arrested but only charged with attempted kidnapping. Still, it was enough to begin the unraveling. Bundy was linked to the abduction of Carol Durranche, a young woman who escaped from his car and gave police a chilling description. She testified against him in 1976, and Bundy was convicted and sentenced to 15 years. But the story was far from over. Bundy escaped jail in June 1977. He jumped out of a second-story courthouse window while representing himself in Aspen, Colorado. He wandered the woods for 6 days before being caught. Jail security was tightened, or so they thought. In December 1977, Bundy escaped again. This time, he cut a hole in the ceiling of his cell, wriggled through crawl spaces, and emerged in the warden's apartment. He walked out the front door dressed in civilian clothes. This time, he disappeared completely. He resurfaced in Florida, and what happened next would shatter any remaining illusions about Ted Bundy. Chapter 2: Florida Bloodbath and a Smiling Monster. When Ted Bundy arrived in Florida in early 1978, he was running out of time and humanity. He used stolen IDs and lived under aliases, staying in rooming houses and paying in cash. But his urges didn't fade. They erupted. On January 15, 1978, he broke into the Chi Omega sorority house at Florida State University. What followed was a frenzy of unprecedented brutality. In less than 15 minutes, Bundy bludgeoned and sexually assaulted 4 women, killing 2, Margaret Bowman and Lisa Levy, and leaving the others in critical condition. He bit 1 victim so hard it left a dental impression in her buttocks, which would later become damning forensic evidence. Not satisfied, Bundy attacked another woman just blocks away an hour later. Her name was Cheryl Thomas. She survived, but with permanent hearing loss and damage to her jaw and shoulder. He vanished again, only to resurface 3 weeks later in Lake City, Florida, where he abducted and murdered 12-year-old Kimberly Leach. Her body was found in a pig shed, sexually assaulted and left to rot. She was Bundy's youngest known victim, and the one that finally broke through national apathy. Bundy was arrested on February 15, 1978, after being pulled over by a Pensacola police officer. He kicked and bit the officer before being subdued. At the station, Bundy finally admitted who he was. Florida prosecutors wasted no time. His trial for the Chi Omega murders began in June 1979 and was the first to be nationally televised. Bundy acted as his own lawyer, turning the trial into a circus. He smiled, winked, and cross-examined witnesses with disturbing confidence. He proposed marriage to a witness, Carol Ann Boone, right there in court, exploiting a loophole in Florida law that made it legally binding. But the evidence was overwhelming. Hair fibers, eyewitnesses, and that chilling bite mark all pointed to one man. Bundy was found guilty and sentenced to death. He stalled for years with appeals, even confessing to 30 murders across 7 states just days before his execution, likely in a bid to delay death. Some believe the real number was over 100. On January 24th, 1989. Ted Bundy was strapped to the electric chair at Florida State Prison. Outside, a crowd gathered. Some held signs that read, "Burn Bundy Burn." When the switch was thrown, cheers erupted. But the story didn't end there. Bundy's legacy haunted law enforcement, forensic science, and the collective psyche. He redefined what a serial killer could look like. He wasn't a monster hiding in shadows. He was the man next door, the law student, the boyfriend, the politician in training. And then came the question that refuses to die. Did Ted Bundy have help? Theories and conspiracies. Did Ted Bundy have accomplices? The official narrative insists Ted Bundy worked alone. He acted as a lone predator, driven by compulsion, narcissism, and psychopathy. But whispers have always lingered. Some survivors and experts argue that Bundy's movements, clean crime scenes, and near-impossible escapes raise one disturbing question. Was someone helping him? Theory 1. The silent accomplice, Carol Ann Boone Bundy's longtime supporter and courtroom bride. Boone moved to Florida to be near him. She smuggled money and letters and even had a child with him during prison visits. Some believe Boone may have helped Bundy after his 1977 escape, possibly aiding his travel or securing fake identities. She denied it, but records show she abruptly moved and changed her name after his execution. Theory 2. The fraternity connection. Some investigators point to the Chi Omega attack as logistically suspect. How did Bundy navigate a locked sorority house in total darkness? Did he have a key or inside knowledge? A theory suggests that Bundy had an accomplice within the fraternity system, someone who helped him access buildings or scope out routines. The theory remains unproven, but unexplained anomalies in the crime scene persist. Theory 3. The interstate network Bundy killed in at least 7 states, a feat difficult in an era without GPS or easy money transfers. Did he receive logistical help from people unaware of his true identity? Some speculate he used anti-establishment networks, possibly former political or legal contacts, to arrange travel, housing, or fake IDs. FBI files reveal Bundy had multiple aliases, including birth certificates and documentation that were never traced. How did he obtain them? Theory 4. The co-killer possibility. A chilling theory suggests Bundy was part of a pair or cult, and that some of his murders were copycats or shared. Former detectives investigating missing girls in Utah and Colorado say the MO in certain cases differs enough to suggest more than one perpetrator. Bundy, in later confessions, alluded cryptically to others out there. Whether a ploy or a leak, no one knows.